This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Several decades ago now, Vermont had its own judicial intrigue. This one ended with an investigation that saw the first ever felony conviction of a Vermont judge, as well as two dozen ethics violations brought against three of the justices on the Vermont Supreme Court. It's all captured in a new book by Vermont attorney James Dunn called Breach of Trust, the ethics scandal that challenged the integrity of the Vermont judiciary. The story centers around Chittenden County Superior Court Assistant Judge Jane Wheel. I spoke with James Dunn recently and asked him to provide some background on this side judge.
Jane Wheel, she grew up in Burlington. She was active in the Democratic Party, mostly behind the scenes doing some campaign work. In 1974, the party put her up for the position of assistant judge in Chittenden County, and she was elected. Assistant judges are something that was created way back when Vermont was first organized into a republic. There was skepticism around these the judges who were, the governor was going to be appointed, and so the founders, if you will, created this position of lay judge or side judge, assistant judge. They go by different names,
and they're not necessarily lawyers, right?
They don't have
a background in law.
They do not. For the most part. And for years, they remained relatively in the background. But Jane actually started a much more active role for assistant judges. She formed an association of assistant judges. She started lobbying on their behalf in the legislature as the court started to limit some of the authority of assistant judges. So she did transform that role of assistant judge into a much more active position than it had been in the past.
It sounds like she was, in some ways, if not a larger-than-life figure, a powerful figure as a side judge, and it seems took advantage of her position.
Well, her personality was such that I think Phil Hoff described her as someone who never learned how to use power, because the assistant judge did have a certain amount of authority. They run the courthouses, the county courthouses. They're responsible for the buildings themselves and for the staff, hiring the clerks. And Jane ran the Chittenden County Courthouse with one might say, an iron hand. She was very difficult to work with. Her staff was alienated almost, to a person. And she had this ability to try to find the judges who were sitting in her court who were friendly to her. And she would confide in them with some of the intrigues that were going on in the courthouse, and they would become friends, if you will. And others that stepped away from that became enemies. There wasn't a lot of in-between with Jane. You were either with her or you were against her.
What did she do that was actually illegal, though?
So in 1985, there were allegations made, and the attorney general started an investigation into two allegations of impropriety. She had allegedly used public money to put on a party for one of the judges who had been appointed to the Supreme Court, one of her friends, Justice Hayes. And she was also charged with putting in for pay on days that she did not show up for work, allegedly. And this was interesting, the question of how that kind of information came out of the clerk's office and found its way to the attorney general's office. And that's described in the book. It took a while for that to happen, but one of the deputy sheriffs told me how he was approached by the clerk one day and asked to meet him in the parking garage, of all places, at night. And the trunk was opened, and in the trunk, the clerk had collected the records that showed that Judge Wheel had been essentially stealing money by putting in for pay. And that led to an investigation. And that investigation then led to an inquiry by the attorney general. It went on for some 9 months, created a tremendous amount of attention in the newspapers. A couple of the Supreme Court justices who had become friends with Jane started to do some things to help her in that investigation. And they were clearly inappropriate. They ended up coming back to bite them.
I mean, that's one of the big questions is, how do three Supreme Court justices get implicated in an ethics scandal involving a county assistant judge?
The story arose as the investigation for the attorney general continued. Justice Hill in particular, who, as I said, the rumor had been well known throughout the bar of a more than collegial relationship between Justice Hill and Jane Wheel. It seemed to be true as the evidence developed in this investigation as to what these justices were doing. For example, Justice Hill, within a month of Jane Wheel being charged with putting in for pay when she wasn't working, wrote a whole new set of rules for what constituted work for assistant judges to try to eliminate those charges. A letter was written by Justice Hill and personally taken over to Attorney General Amestoy, questioning his ethics, questioning leaks from his department. And the justice actually sat there in his room and stared at him while Amestoy read the letter. In the end, the investigation for Jane Wheel turned into an investigation into whether she was being truthful during some of the inquest hearings. She was eventually charged with felonies, became the first judge ever to be charged with – she was charged with three felonies and ultimately was sent to prison.
But it wasn't just Justice William Hill who was implicated. Among the Supreme Court justices, Thomas Hayes and Ernest Gibson were also wrapped up in these ethics violations and ethics charges. In what way?
Well, Justice Hill had also been in the courthouse in Burlington as a Superior Court judge with Judge Wheel. So both Justice Hill and Justice Hayes formed that tight relationship with Jane Wheel during that period. And then when they went to the Supreme Court, they stayed connected to her. When she was under investigation, evidence surfaced that she was making multiple phone calls to these justices at their homes, at the court. Night before one of the inquest hearings, she had a 90-minute phone call with Justice Hayes. And these were all being published day in and day out in the local newspapers. And eventually, the Judicial Conduct Board that oversees the ethics of judges and justices, in an unprecedented move, normally complaints are filed by the board when someone comes in, a citizen makes a complaint about a judge.
Like a formal – somebody makes a formal complaint.
Yeah, they weren't happy with the way they were treated in court or something of that nature. Here, the board itself, the Judicial Conduct Board, issued its own complaint based on the news reports of what the justices were doing. I believe it was in January 1987, they issued a 24-count indictment, if you will, of allegations of misconduct of the ethical and violations of the Judicial Conduct Code.
But that's one of the other interesting parts of this story as you write about it, because the Judicial Conduct Board generally reports to the Supreme Court, right? And yet in this case, three justices were implicated in these ethics violations. And at one point, all five justices had to step aside, and there was a whole other court hearing the report of the Judicial Conduct Board?
Exactly right. In fact, the New York Times, which was reporting on this case, actually noted that, you know, that the scandal, I believe the headline was, the scandal runs so deep in Vermont that all five justices were recused themselves. Now, three of the justices were under investigation, and they were required by court rule. The other two justices, the Chief Justice Fred Allen and Justice Louis Peck, they recused themselves because they felt they might be witnesses to some of the events that had happened and that they shouldn't be participating in these cases as they were coming up either. So, yes, the New York Times called it a rump court, which was a word I actually hadn't heard, but where all the justices are recused. And five justices were appointed from the lower bench to sit as acting Supreme Court justices to hear the issues that were coming up.
You mentioned that Jane Wheel was convicted in a criminal case, right? She actually went to jail, although for a very short time. What were the other upshots of this case and of the Judicial Conduct Board's report?
The board is really an arm of the Supreme Court. So it hears evidence and makes recommendations to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court then held a hearing of its own. Justice Hill came in and objected to a number of the findings and recommendations. But ultimately, it's the Supreme Court then that makes the determination of whether a judge has in fact violated his or her ethical obligations.
And what did they decide? And
the only judge that actually survived to make it to hearing was Justice Hill. Justice Hayes died during the hearing, unfortunately, in that he never really had an opportunity to clear his name. And Justice Gibson, who was a much more minor player than the others, you know, he was not from Chittenden County. He did not have a social relationship, many of the things that Justice Hill and Hayes had done. He was allowed to sign a statement acknowledging that he could have acted more prudently, and they dismissed him from the case. So the only justice that actually went to trial was Justice Hill. He retired a month or two before the trial and made an argument along with Judge Wheel that once you were retired, there was nothing really the board could do to you because there was no penalty that was applicable. That actually went to the Supreme Court, among many other issues in this case. And the Supreme Court ruled that, no, if you are alleged to have acted inappropriately while you are a judge, you are subject to discipline, even though you may retire in the meantime. So Justice Hill was found guilty, if you will, of, I believe, five ethical violations of the 14 that were charged. The one punishment that a retired judge or justice can receive is a prohibition against any subsequent sitting as a retired judge. It's not an insignificant penalty. A lot of judges retire and then help out sitting from time to time on cases, and Justice Hill was prohibited from ever doing that.
Mm. And Jane Wheel?
She served 19 days. She had a medical problem. There was also a crowding of prisons at that time, and they were trying to move people out. So she was released after 19 days. You know, the trial itself that took place in Rutland that convicted her took 4 weeks. And during that 4 weeks, the jury was sequestered in a Rutland hotel so that they actually served, if you will, more time than Judge Wheel served.
How big a deal was this? I mean, you mentioned the New York Times coverage. I was a child during this time, and I don't remember it, although I probably wouldn't. But did this really roil Vermont and roil the courts and the judicial system?
It did. It was covered in the national media, the Washington Post, I believe the Boston Globe had articles. And it shook the roots of the Vermont judiciary. One of the things that I picked up from this was the fact that this board, this Judicial Conduct Board, which is for the most part a reactive board, you know, reacting to complaints, was proactive, you know, I think maybe for the first time. Nothing like this had ever struck the judiciary in the past. There had been individual complaints of justices, but this was a profound impact on, you know, well-respected Supreme Court justices. And one of the things that was interesting about writing this book was how little even I remembered of it. I write in the introduction how I had my own interaction with Judge Wheel.
Because you were a lawyer at the time.
Yes, 3 years before the scandal that I write about, I had my own interaction where I witnessed, you know, the power and arrogance of both her and Justice Hill. In a way that for me as a lawyer at that point, I had been practicing 8 years, I was shocked to see. And in all the years, 35 years since then, I'd never seen anything like it. You know, I returned to my practice, and it was 3 years later that the scandal that I write about here started to happen, where these allegations came out and the justices stepped forward to help her, and it all unraveled.
Why did you want to write about this?
I was curious about what happened. I'd had my own experience, as I mentioned, in 1981. So I was curious as I then saw, in later years, I saw her get involved in this scandal. I mean, I didn't know much more about it than reading it in the newspaper like everyone else. You know, I often wondered about it. And then I thought I'd write about the courthouse case that I had. It just occurred to me that really the real story was what happened starting in 1985 when the scandal that actually brought everything down started. So I moved from my courthouse case to this and just started to follow the trail of news and information and the court, the records in the courts. You know, as I think Judge Morse, who just became Justice Morse, but he was in the court with Jane as well, Jim Morse. You know, I think it's his comment on the back of the cover there that says something about it's a story that should be told and not forgotten. And I think there's some truth to that, particularly with lawyers. I think it's a good thing to be aware that, you know, it's a fragile system out there.
Still a fragile system.
Well, I think it'll always be a fragile, you know, democracy itself is fragile. And our judges being impartial and fair is, you know, critical to the overall operation of what we have here. It is a good story to be told and reminded that even here, up here in these beautiful mountains, and we are not immune to things going bad and that we do need to stay vigilant.
Well, Jim, thank you for telling us the story and sharing a little bit of your research.
Yeah, well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
James Dunn is a retired Vermont lawyer and author of Breach of Trust, the ethics scandal that challenged the integrity of the Vermont judiciary. He'll be discussing his book at Burlington's Phoenix Bookstore tonight, Thursday, and you can find a link with all the details at vpr.net.